Okay, we're back, folks. Pete Hendrickson here with my special guest, former Michigan State Senator Patrick Kolbeck. We're talking about election fraud in the November 2020 election, some of the things that have been discovered, some of the things that are being covered up and suppressed by not only the media and not only the Democrats on whose behalf or who benefited from the election events in 2020, but also by Republicans, in fact, a little cadre of whom three Republican state senators in Michigan recently produced a report, in fact, saying they couldn't see any evidence of election irregularities, or at least they weren't willing to go on the record as admitting to having seen any, despite having claiming to have done extensive research into the subject. And Patrick Kolbeck has written an analysis debunking the report issued by these three gentlemen. We're talking about that right now, and we were about to get into issues of statutory violations that were involved in the 2020 election. And by the way, those who missed the first hour, if you did, you'll be able to find that in the archives for the Power Hour soon after the program is done here. And I encourage you to tune in and listen to that first hour so you can catch the first part of our conversation dealing with other parts of this subject. So Patrick, please continue with the statutory violations. And by the way, I'm going to want, if possible, to also hear from you a little bit about your own experiences as an observer in the TCF Center. I think you were at the TCF Center in Detroit. Yeah. Some of the horrendous things that went on there, just to give people a firsthand picture of how some of this played out. But let's go ahead with the statutory problems.
Well, I'm sure probably your listeners aren't going to want me to start quoting MCL 168.31A and stuff, but bottom line is...
You can summarize it in layman's language, and that'll be fine.
I've got all that detail at everything that we just went through in the previous segment was just going through systematically all this evidence. I put it in a post called Election Evidence or Election Fraud Evidence Primer, and that's up at my website, letsfixstuff.org. So you can get access to all the detailed links around each one of these assertions so you can go off and look at the evidence yourself. But I think if you don't mind, I want to pivot over into this Michigan Senate Oversight Committee report
came out. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, that's very important.
Because they organize the data a little bit differently. So instead of organizing it by chain of custody or by statutory violations, they put it into the Lucky 13 group of findings, if you will. So different categories they put forward. Things like what's their assertion on deceased and non-residents voting, what's their assertions around unsolicited absentee ballots, internet connections, poll challengers, third party funds, what happened or what really happened in Antrim County, all that stuff. So you can see all that detailed breakout and what we'll kind of give an overview of here right now. But all that information is up at a separate post up on Let's Fix Stuff, and it's called the Michigan Senate 2020 Election Report, Big Lie versus Big Truth. And the way I organize
great
this
title
report, I'm tired of them calling what we're talking about the big lie. I really want to highlight, no, guys, you saying that there's no election fraud, I don't want to get into this name calling thing like a playground. Say, well, I know you are, but what am I type of deal? I'm
right.
Tired of that kind of stuff. But you know what? I'm not going to let these guys label what many of fellow affiants, including myself, testified to. I'm not going to let them label that as a lie. First of all, if we are lying, it's subject to perjury. That is a criminal offense. And the people, including myself, who made those testimonies, are not liars and they're not criminals. And that's what they're essentially saying whenever I see that big lie. So what I tried to do is highlight, no, guys, here's the big truth. They took a lot of the hearsay testimony of election officials and what they testified to on how elections should operate and ignored what eyewitness testimony testified to actually did happen. And so there's this big difference. There's this disconnect in this report that there was a severe bias to how elections are supposed to be run, which I think a lot of these folks that are on the Senate Oversight Committee were just trying to get their heads around because they didn't really understand how elections are supposed to be run. It's not something that you're intrinsically born with, which is an understanding of how elections are run. I had a little bit of an advantage. When I served as vice chair of the Elections and Government Reform Committee in the Senate, I took the time as a public servant to actually go off and diagram out all the election processes. I wanted to understand exactly what I was going to be responsible for overseeing election bills or overseeing legislation that was designed to improve the system. So I wanted to know what I was changing from before I changed to something else. I'm convinced by what I've read here in this testimony is they didn't understand what they were changing from. So this report is really them trying to catch up with what I had spent years going off and developing an understanding of around how elections are supposed to be conducted. They were playing catch up on it.
Yeah, and it is not intuitive. I've had to go through the same research myself to get a handle on it for my own purposes, and yeah, it's not intuitive.
I think it's just as simple as marking your name on a ballot and then somebody counts your vote.
Right.
Not if you want to maintain the integrity of the system. And actually, along those lines, there's actually another post at letsfixstuff.org, which actually is a breakout of all the key election processes. So you can see it yourself. You can download it for yourself. This is my cut at not just how elections are supposed to run, but where are they vulnerable to people that want to mess with the results of the elections. How could they actually steal an election? And I'm not saying that all those election thefts were active in the 2020 election, but I wanted to be very systematic about it. I mean, you know, my background's an engineer, and I used to do a lot of what they called failure modes and effects analyses on the systems that I would design, where they essentially tried to say, okay, we know how you as an engineer wanted this system to work, but what are all the different ways that people could come in and break it? So I designed environmental control system for the space station. And so I was pretty confident that it would work really nice until I talked to the safety and reliability engineers and they started talking about all the different ways that astronauts could misuse the system or that things can just go bump in the night. You have to address that. Our clerks and a lot of our election officials, I don't think have thought about it from a election fraud perspective, from a criminal perspective. And that's what I tried to do in this post. So that's a breakout. So it's obvious that this was kind of the Michigan Senate's eighth grade book report. They didn't even put footnotes or bibliography in there, going off and providing links to the actual documents upon which they're making their assertions. But I tried to correct that in my post that I just put together in a few days. They had a few months to pull theirs together with a bunch of staff. All I had was a few days and a few
It's harder and it takes longer when you're trying to fudge and conceal and obscure and evade.
Yeah, I don't even know if they put the effort into that, to tell you the truth, because they didn't evade much. They just threw out opinions as if they were fact and then just said, trust me, I know what I'm talking about. And I took a different approach. I mean, of course, I put in some opinions and some general observations, but when it came down to the brass tacks of each and every one of their findings and assertions, I tried to break out what their big lie was versus the big truth. And in that big truth, I tried to provide links to information that I think readers would find valuable in discerning, well, who's really telling the truth on this. So including links to some of these sworn affidavits that they chose not to provide in their document.
Mm-hmm.
So bottom line on all this is that they came to the conclusion that there was no quote-unquote systemic fraud in the election. And frankly, I don't care if it's systemic. I don't care if it's widespread. What I care is whether or not it's significant enough. And by significant, did it change the election results, right?
That's right. That's right.
Do we have the wrong person in the White House right now? Do we have the wrong person as Senate Majority Leader, wrong person as the Speaker? Do we have the
wrong person in the Michigan Supreme Court?
Right, and wrong Senate reps.
Wrong
right?
Senator.
Or wrong state reps. I mean, sorry.
Yeah.
The evidence right now is pointing to yes to all those, unfortunately.
I think it's absolutely pointing to it. It's more than pointing to it. It's got arrows with the neon on them pointing to it from every possible direction.
Yeah, let me address, you know, something to a lot of people say, well, If that were really true, then it wouldn't have been dismissed in every court case in the nation. And
please say something about that, Patrick.
Yeah,
please.
That is such
an absurd and ignorant perspective.
There's been 24 court cases so far decided on the merit of the evidence provided, and the folks who are exposing election fraud have prevailed in 17 out of 24 of those court cases. Yet the media is parroting this nonsense that all these cases dismissed on basis of process, which I would submit is the case in Antrim County. You know, right now, I don't know if you're familiar with this, but the Antrim County court case on the election results in Antrim County was dismissed by Judge Kevin Elsenheimer.
Yes.
And the reason he dismissed it was not on the basis of the evidence. He was saying that the relief that they've already been granted was already that they were requesting in the lawsuit was already granted.
Yeah, and it was that sort of issue, standing issue or mootness or what have you, that was responsible for almost all of the actual dismissals. And then a bunch of the rest of them were actually withdrawn by the plaintiffs.
Right.
For a variety of different reasons. This was not in the vast majority of cases any issue in which a court said, okay, I've looked at everything, everybody's, you know, had their chance to say their piece, and you lose. That was just never the case.
No. Matter of fact, the judge alluded to the fact that he thought some of the assertions had merit. So, by the way, if you want to find out what I'm talking about, there's a website that keeps pretty up to date on all these lawsuits, and it's called election-integrity.info. election-integrity.info. They've been doing a pretty good job of keeping these court cases up to date.
Great.
All right. So the bottom line on all this is that they came up with a conclusion that there was no systemic evidence of fraud. And I believe that we do have, if anybody reading it from an objective perspective, would come to the conclusion that no, indeed, there was very significant evidence of fraud that deserves a forensic audit. Why a forensic audit? First of all, let's clarify what a forensic audit is and is not. First of all, it's not what was conducted by the Michigan Secretary of State. The Michigan Secretary of State, Jocelyn Benson, has made a big deal out of the fact that she conducted 250 risk-limiting audits of 18,000 ballots across all 83 counties in the state of Michigan. Now, I just want to put this in context for everybody. First of all, risk-limiting audit is not really an audit. It's got the word audit in it deliberately because in our Michigan Constitution, citizens are guaranteed the right to an audit of statewide election results under Article 2, Section 4. So she had to use the word audit. But what she actually did was simply a recount. And she didn't even do a recount in most of these precincts because if you do the math, 250 precincts, and they counted 18,000 votes. That averages out to about 72 votes per precinct. Typically, there's about 500 to 1,500 or 1,000 to 1,500 voters in a given precinct. By state law, it's limited to 2,999. So bottom line is they didn't count every single vote in those precincts. So it wasn't even a recount. All it was a talking point so that they could say that they did an audit.
Right.
And our legislators who should know the Constitution, they took an oath to support the Constitution, should know better than that. And the senators, Senator McBroom, Senator Tice, and Senator Bison, apparently didn't understand that.
Yeah.
And so we need an audit.
Dodge.
Yeah, so what's the difference between an audit and a forensic audit? It's simple. A forensic audit means that you put in sufficient rigor in your audit to put it in front of a judge in a court of law. It's a matter of what rigor is applied to it, which means that you do things like check in the evidence, check out the evidence. You put seals on the evidence, and you check out the seals and make sure that you note the condition of the evidence when you receive it and when you submit it. And it's a very disciplined process akin to what they're doing right now in Arizona.
Yeah, and plus, if I may, one thing that would be a key component in a forensic audit in Michigan is that we would actually go through the process in such an audit of verifying signatures on the millions of absentee ballots that were counted in the vote total, but for which no signature verification was done.
Yeah,
we don't have any idea who cast those votes and whether they were cast by real people or not, or whether they were, you know, 1,500 of them were cast by one real person as opposed to by 1,500 actual qualified voters. That is completely unknown right now.
Right. And that gets into that same check-in, check-out process applies to every single link in our chain of custody, which is what you're getting at. I mean, if you were given a ballot to go off and vote, how did you verify that you were valid to actually go off and cast that ballot?
Right.
So that's what we're dealing with right now. And that's what we submitted 10,000 affidavits to legislators in Lansing demanding a forensic audit be conducted in the state of Michigan. And it only took 150 to get the attention of the Arizona senators. We're a little slower in Michigan. So we had to get a 10,000 and growing. But the constitutional right is still there. We're asking for it. They do have the right to conduct this audit. Now, there's a bill going forward under Representative Steve Caro attempting to push for a forensic audit through legislation. And I admire Rep. Caro for peeking over the foxhole lip and getting in the fire, and he's been barraged by a lot of folks. He's got courage. He's the only one of our legislators initially that was courageous enough to go out in public saying, guys, we need to honor the demands of citizens calling for a forensic audit. So he did it. He put in a bill. Now, I'm convinced we don't need a bill. The language of the Constitution is very clear. The legislature has the authority to go off. It's called self-executing authority to go off and conduct an audit as they see fit. They have the ability to do this without legislation. What they lack right now is the will to do that. They need the majority support of each chamber or one of the chambers to go off and kick off an audit. Doesn't need both of them. If just the House wanted to do it, they could do it. And they need to, they have all the authority. They've already demonstrated they have subpoena authority under MCL 4.101. They subpoenaed data in Livonia and Detroit, which turned out that they're just going through the motions because they never even got the data to investigate. And so the bottom line is I think we're going to get an audit. The legislators have the authority to do an audit. There's multiple threads to get to this forensic audit. The Antrim County case, I mean, that's all they were looking for was a forensic audit of the results in Antrim County. They never got it, even though the judge said he did. So there's a judicial thread, and then there's a legislative thread. And right now, we're banking on the legislative thread and a wake-up call for these legislators who are on summer break right now and trying to get them to – well, I think they're passing the budget today, so they're not quite on summer break here, but anyway, bottom line is we need the legislators to act on this forensic audit.
Yeah, which means that those of us, the citizens everywhere, need to stay hot on this subject. Need to put pressure where pressure needs to be put. And I will say this: you know, this radio broadcast is going out nationwide. It isn't confined to Michigan. There are a lot of people listening that, you know, to which Michigan events directly aren't necessarily relevant, but I will tell you people, Michigan events are relevant to you because Michigan was one of five swing states in which which were remarkably distinguished from all of the other voting districts in the country in terms of how the election results were reported to have ended up. These are the places where the counting stopped at 10:30 on November 3rd with Donald Trump, you know, well in the lead, comfortably in the lead, and then was resumed quietly at 4:30 in the morning the next day. And lo and behold, after a few hours of that, Joe Biden was declared the victor by anywhere from 10,000 votes in one of these locations to 154,000 in Michigan. The administration, the government that you're under right now, that is ruling your life right now, was dictated by the outcomes in Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Georgia, and Arizona. And these things matter a lot. We all need to keep the pressure on in every possible way. Patrick, we're down to just about 3 minutes or so before the bottom of the hour break. I want to give you an opportunity to talk about your book a little bit. And I want to tell you, I know that your book, Wrestling Gators, an Outsider's Guide to Draining the Swamp, obviously deals with the issue of corrupt politicians. I want you to know I opened the program today at the top of the first hour with the Texas Sidestep sung by Charles Durning from the Best Little Whorehouse in Texas. I don't know if you're familiar with the film or know the song, but it basically is a nice little satirical romp relating to political duplicity. And I think that that's largely the subject of your book. Am I wrong?
No, I mean, it definitely talks about a bit of corruption. And I don't necessarily paint it in terms of corruption. I just say, here's their behavior, and here's the way a patriot would behave. And I try to contrast them. And I go through all the different tactics that are being used by leadership to go off and try to influence people in a way that may violate the principles upon which they ran for office. And I don't know if I go so far as say that they're corrupt in that context. I let people do their own.
Let people make their own judgment. That's fine and that's appropriate.
I think they've just got different motivations. Let's just put it that way. And I want to go through there, and I want to give people a window into, and the reason I say that is because just calling them corrupt, it kind of it keeps people from understanding what really is motivating these guys to do the behavior that they're doing. And if you understand what's motivating them, you'll better understand how to push the levers of power so that they do the right thing instead of the wrong thing.
Very well said. Very well said. Yeah. We don't want to make it a hitting a switch kind of thinking, because it isn't.
Yeah, I actually put process flows in this to show how geeky I am, but it's like how a bill becomes a law, how does a Senate majority leader get elected, how do you run for office, all those are in that document, including some anecdotes that hopefully people find interesting, and also some policy recommendations that I put in that I was pretty aggressive on during my gubernatorial campaign and throughout my Senate career. So,
yeah, that's great. I see that it's gets 4.5 out of 5 stars on Amazon, and it is available there. I encourage anybody that wants to learn a little bit more about the insides of the process, both the political process in terms of getting election, getting elected, and operating as an elected official, keeps this book in mind. Patrick, I want to thank you for being on. You're a great guest. I appreciate it a lot, and I very much appreciate your efforts in regard to the this extraordinarily important issue of the election.
Thanks for helping us get the word out, Pete. Appreciate it. I mean, you're on the front lines of this information war, and we need more voices like yours.
Yeah, well, we need more voices like yours, too. Thanks again.
Thanks.
Hey, this is Power Hour J. We've been spring cleaning at the Power Mall. We have an overstock of Grown by Nature supplements, and we'd like to offer you 25% off of select products. Hurry, the sale will only be available while supplies last. No code necessary to shop at thepowermall.com, or you can call J at 877-817-9829. That's thepowermall.com or 877-817-9829.
My husband is a welder by trade, but he grinds his welding product, and he doesn't wear a helmet or a mask to do that. And he had this cruddy stuff in his lungs, and it just wasn't going away. And I heard you one time talking about the Sera enzyme for the lungs, and my goodness, I mean, he can breathe so much easier, and I don't hear that crud in his lungs. Thank you so very much.
To find out more about this product or others like it, go to our website at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com. Call 877-817-9829. That number again is 877-817-9829. Jay's standing by to take your call. Now more than ever, we need your support. Buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
The Power Hour has been in existence since the turn of the 21st century. It is more critical than ever for you to sign up for our free newsletter and our breaking news. Simply text the word Power Hour to 22828 on your mobile phone, or sign up when you visit thepowerhour.com. Our website again is thepowerhour.com, or text Power Hour to 22828. Together, our legacy will live on for centuries.
boost your immune system naturally this year with oil of oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that oil of oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
Guys, I'm not giving
anything. We're
talking
the bridges, the roads, this.
Now, where
would it go?
The Ghostbusters are here, Mr. Mayor.
The Ghostbusters. Okay, the Ghostbusters. Hey, where's this Peck?
I am Walter Peck, sir, and I'm prepared to make a full report. These men are consummate snowball artists. They use sense and nerve gases to induce hallucinations. People think they're seeing ghosts. And they call these bozos who conveniently show up to deal with the problem with a fake electronic light show.
Everything was fine with our system until the power grid was shut off by Dickless here.
They caused an explosion.
Is this true?
Yes, it's true. This man has no dick.
Jesus!
Hey,
break it up!
All right. Well, that's what I heard.
This city hall.
Now, what am I going to do here, John? What is this?
All I know is that was no light show we saw this morning.
I've seen every form of combustion known to man. But this beats the hell out of me.
The walls in the 53rd precinct were bleeding. How do you explain that?
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Oh, Your Eminence.
How are you, Lenny?
You're looking good, Mike. We're in a real fix here. What do you think I should do?
Lenny, officially, the church will not take any position on the religious implications of these phenomena. Hmm. Personally, Lenny, I think it's a sign from God. But don't quote me on that.
No, I think that's a smart move, Mike.
Well, I'm not going to call a press conference and tell everyone to start praying.
I'm Winston Zeddemore, Your Honor. Look, I've only been with the company for a couple of weeks.
But I gotta tell you, these things are real. Since I joined these men, I have seen shit that'll turn you white.
Well, you can believe Mr. Pecker.
My name is Peck.
Or you could accept the fact that this city is headed for a disaster of biblical proportion.
What do you mean, biblical?
What he means is Old Testament, Mr.
Yes.
Mayor. Real wrath of God type stuff. Exactly. Fire and brimstone coming down from the skies. Rivers and seas boiling.
40 years of darkness, earthquakes, volcanoes.
The dead rising from the grave. Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together. Mass hysteria.
Enough, I get the point. What if you're wrong?
If I'm wrong, nothing happens. We go to jail, peacefully, quietly. We'll enjoy it. But if I'm right, and we can stop this thing, Lenny, you will have saved the lives of millions of registered voters.
Yeah. Hobgoblins, folks. Hobgoblins. That's the politics, that's practical politics in action. As as said by H.L. Mencken back in the first part of the 20th century, the whole aim of practical politics is to keep the populace alarmed and hence clamorous to be led to safety by menacing it with an endless series of hobgoblins, all of them imaginary. I bring this up and play that clip because one of the items in the news today, you'll all have heard it at the top of the hour when the little news blurbs were running. The World Health Organization is now urging people who have been vaccinated to continue to mask and social distance in order to protect them against now it's variants that are being brooded about as the latest excuse for the maintenance of all of the unlawful, unconstitutional edicts of control and the destruction of the existing economy and capitalism and liberty as we have known them throughout our lives and to continue to pave the way for the Great Reset. The very idea that the previous pandemic, the panic of the pandemic has been fading away and people are no longer afraid, with some exceptions, of course. You still see some people walking around with masks on, but every time you do now, it's an exception to the rule, and you have to ask yourself what is wrong with that person. That's been fading. The transformation that it had been supporting, that it had been permitting, is threatened. And the interests that want that transformation, that want the Great Reset, that want the Build Back Better and all that nonsense are worried. And so they're trotting out the prospect of variants as the excuse for keeping everything going the same way it is. And it is true, I have to say, and I've said this before on this program, that the people who have received the vaccine and that being their sole means of purportedly acquiring a defense against the coronavirus, the C-19 version anyway, are indeed at risk probably to a certain degree from variations in that particular virus because the vaccines are not actually vaccines. They're mRNA injections that instruct the recipient's cells to create a portion of the C-19 virus, the spike protein portion, which is in itself is one of the most significant pathogenic elements of the C-19 virus. So this vaccine is telling your cells to create something that's going to do you a pretty good amount of harm by itself, and yet it is only one little portion of the virus. So protection is not provided by these quote unquote vaccines from the entirety of the virus and in particular from elements of the virus that would remain even in a variation, even in a mutation. Most of the virus, the original virus, would remain intact in a mutation. And if natural immunity that's achieved by actually receiving by being infected with the virus, which is something that is accomplished by a normal vaccine, which consists of the actual virus itself, either in a dead or weakened state. That's what a normal vaccine is. Anyone who had received a normal vaccine of that kind would have protection against variants as well, because the variant would retain most of the characteristics of the original virus, even though it was a mutation. And the immunological protection that would have been achieved by an actual vaccine or exposure, infection with the virus, would offer protection against all of those independent characteristics, those individual characteristics of the virus. And so a mutation would still have most of those, and your body would still produce an immune response to variants of the virus, because again, they would still contain mostly the same characteristics that the original did. So it's the vaccinated people that are the ones that are at any risk of these variants. People who have achieved natural immunity from infection are not vulnerable in that way. Most people are not vulnerable in any event because the risk of the virus in the first place is absolutely minimal to the vast majority of the population. Any healthy person below approaching the age of mortality anyway is safe from this thing. The odds of contracting and dying from the virus in healthy younger people below the age of 70 years old is infinitesimally small, 1 in a million in some of the age categories here, literally 1 in a million. And we have cures for infections from COVID-19 as well. The HCQ azithromycin, and ZPAC and zinc combinations and ivermectin as well provide good effective treatment for those who actually contract the thing. So there's really almost zero danger from the virus to people who have not been vaccinated. And even the people who have been vaccinated can avail themselves of those treatments. So this is this business of the variants and the WHO's effort to refan the flames of hysteria and panic and make this into an issue again and a justification for the masking and distancing and basically retaining all of the social pathologies that we've been suffering from over the last 15 months is just another hobgoblin menace effort of the sort that Mencken spoke of. We need to resist it. We need to dismiss it. We need to deride it and denounce it. And I hope everyone will do those things. So we spent the past hour talking with Patrick Kolbeck about election fraud. Another little note that actually came up in the news report at the top of the hour that relates to that in a kind of an amusing way is the news that the New York mayoral race, which was just conducted, the officials were forced to admit that 135,000 test ballots were inadvertently included in the election results. It doesn't prove anything in and of itself, but it is an amusing, little tidbit of data to throw into the mix. These sorts of things happen even when someone isn't deliberately trying to do it. We get sometimes massive injections of error. In the course of the conversation with Patrick Kolbeck, Patrick brought up the Antrim County affair. Everyone in the country probably is familiar with Antrim County. It did succeed in getting some press coverage because there was a vote flip situation there where the county was initially considered a Biden win. And as it turned out, some 6,000 or 7,000 votes in that county had been flipped by the machinery that was counting votes, flipped from Trump to Joe Biden. And that's what ended up making this pretty solidly red county appear to have decided to go blue in November to begin with, before the error was discovered by a voter in the county who knows what its politics are and couldn't believe that the result that was reported and raised a stink about it and had had things checked out and sought to this fix. This stuff happens and the very idea that it should be treated as just beyond the pale to argue that that there could have been problems in the election, even without consideration of the interests of some to ensure that there were problems, to create problems and exploit them, is ridiculous. And yet that has been the case. The there is no evidence of fraud nonsense that that we heard monolithically from the mainstream media from basically November 5th to the present. And most recently with this report by the three Michigan senators that purport to have examined the evidence and found no evidence of large-scale election irregularities. Amazing. But that'll come out in the wash. We're all going to keep the pressure on and see to it that that the whitewashing is not allowed to win the day. Okay. I want to turn attention now to the fact that we have what I call Declaration Day coming up, July 4th, the day that the signed Declaration of Independence was released to the public, announced to the public. The actual signing was on the 2nd, but the official publication was the 4th. And this is an interesting Declaration Day this year. This is one that not long ago Joe Biden was telling America that they couldn't expect to be able to celebrate the day unless everyone in the country got vaccinated, because only then would it be possible for people to gather safely in groups, even small groups. And Biden's expectation was that small groups would be capable of possible on July 4th if we all kept to the program and everybody got the jab. And the implication in a lot of ways was, and I think that's something that was deliberately left hanging in the air at the point of this announcement, was the idea that that maybe vaccination would become mandatory and that it would be a matter of what you were allowed to do on July 4th, which may have proven to be just a little too problematic with the symbolism of the occasion and all that to get any legs. But that was the sense I got when Biden was talking about people being able to gather in small groups. Certainly the better part of the country at that point, and this being just a few months ago, the better part of the country at that point was no longer buying into the scaremongering about the virus and the idea that we were all huddled under our covers waiting to be told or given permission by government to go out and see our friends. Here in Michigan, we're constantly inundated by public service announcements, so to speak, put out by the Michigan Department of Health, telling us that if you want to be able to go hug grandma, get a shot, get vaccinated. If you want to be able to hang out with your friends, get vaccinated. Well, no, actually, we can go hug grandma and we can hang out with our friends even without being vaccinated. There's absolutely no reason to get vaccinated in order to do those things. Maybe grandma needs to get a shot. Grandma being, presumably elderly and perhaps sickly, and therefore at some risk from a communicable illness, but as much at risk from the flu as from COVID-19 or any of several other things, frankly. So grandma needs to worry about having a little protection, but grandma's kids and grandkids certainly do not. So this proposition that we were all hunkered down in this state of fear the way Joe Biden would want us to be, and Gretchen Whitmer and Cuomo and others around the country. It was ridiculous, but this was the proposition was that this was the way things were, and we all had to do as we were told in order to be able to have an Independence Day, a Declaration Day celebration of the sort that we normally would. This upcoming July 4th is special on that front, and I am hoping that everybody. We're still not vaccinated nationwide. I don't think beyond 60%, if that figure is even valid. And I personally believe that it's very possible that those numbers are being pumped in order to produce this sense that everybody's doing it. Why aren't you? And it may be a lower figure than the 60%. But whatever. What do I know? Anyway, I hope everyone has huge gatherings. For Declaration Day, and I want to close a little bit here with an explanation of why I call it Declaration Day, by the way. And I'm going to read this. This is from a page on my website, losthorizons.com, and it reads, Declaration Day, the day the American colonists expressed their intention to be free and individually sovereign at any cost, even that of their lives. Although it is true that an important kind of independence was realized that day, it was an independence of the spirit only. Nobody found themselves free to go about their business the next day, unmolested in the exercise of their new liberty, due to having laid their claim to that liberty. It was not until many bloody years after formally declaring that they hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and recognized that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, and that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundations on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness, that Americans actually found themselves able to exercise a true, hard-won independence. The Declaration was the key and critical first step. It put the sacred honor of the declarants at stake in their faithful enforcement of that bold resolution. Once having said that, when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is the people's right, it is their duty, to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. There's no going back to subordination with one's honor intact. Thus, we properly celebrate the 4th of July as the anniversary of the public announcement of the momentous decision made by the revolutionary colonists. But it is equally proper to be mindful that independence was merely the destination on the horizon toward which the colonists resolutely set their course that day. It was only faithful, stubborn, come hell or high water enforcement that actually secured, 7 long years and much hell and high water later, the practical reality of the independence bravely declared in that summer of 1776. And with that said, I want to, I'm going to play a little clip for you folks of a reading of what I consider to be a proper replacement for the Pledge of Allegiance that is typically read by everyone at various times, gatherings and so forth, written by the socialist Francis Bellamy, and it basically is a flag chant which is indelibly tinged with state idolatry and doesn't represent, in my view, the real core underpinning of American principles to which Americans really should be pledging their allegiance. So, if you will, this is a reading of what I call the proper Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the principles of the United States of America,
holding that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, and that among these are life, liberty and the pursuit of happiness. I hold further that it is the security of rights that governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, and that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such a form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness.
All right. Yeah. I hope you'll agree with me that that text is a more appropriate pledge of allegiance for Americans to make. Those are the principles that that this country is founded on. Those are the principles that we need badly to preserve and protect and enforce. And it's only by remembering them, but only by saying them and teaching them to our children and reminding our elected officials of them and reminding our neighbors and our friends and our family of them that we will have those principles honored and that they will rule the day here in this country as they should. Anyone interested in that pledge, you can find the text at losthorizons.com/thepledge.pdf. That's capital T and capital P on the pledge, but otherwise all one word. Please go there, get that, download it, print it, share it with people, and encourage people to use it next time that you are hosting an event, a political rally, a sporting event, or whatever in which a Pledge of Allegiance need be read, please use it. I'm Pete Hendrickson. Appreciate you being with me. We'll see you next time, folks. Have a good day.
Heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.